Hello and welcome to the Growth Experts Funded Now What podcast with your host, Andrew Lee Miller. You're in store for a chat about funding, marketing, startups, and all things growth. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for coming back to the Funded Now What podcast. I am super excited because now I finally made it to a point with the podcast where I get startups that I actually already know about and love on the show, starting with Lex, which is an amazing dating app / social networking app for the queer and LGBTQ community, which I am super excited about because it's like the hottest thing in online dating. And if you didn't know, because you're not super in to me, I used to work at Tinder, and that's why I'm so excited to have co-founder and CEO Jennifer Lewis here on the show. Jen, thank you so much for joining us.
Great. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for that intro.
Yes. And for the people that didn't know, Lex is so cool to me because it's like classifieds feel where you go and you literally write an ad about what you're looking for. At least when I got to check out the app, that's how it was. Beautiful, stunning application. But the reason that's so amazing to me personally is because it reminds me of the old days with Craigslist personals versus now where nobody even fills out a bio in a dating app. You actually write what you want and what you're looking for, and then people out in the community can respond to you, and it helps you actually build a community that way. I think Lex is so incredible because suicide rates are really, really high in the queer community, and the LGBTQ community is somewhere around 400% higher than straight community, hetero community, and that's really alarming. It's one of the number one reasons for death for young people in America. And I think just finding somebody out there that wants to do the same stuff as you, that likes the same stuff as you, is the medicine to that problem. So you're actually creating a tool, yes, to get community and go do fun stuff like tea parties and stuff like you have on your website, but it's actually you're out there really saving lives. And that's why I think this is so incredible, because this is a community that drives America's art and culture and vernacular and so much more that puts us on the map globally. And so it's a community that I really feel passionate about supporting. So thank you for all you do. I just wanted to start that before we get into it. Yeah, Jen, tell us a little bit about what got you here to starting Lex.
Yeah. So actually just the history of Lex, you talked about it being in kind of similar to Craigslist personals. The origins of Lex actually starts with it's an interesting startup story, not common, not where most Silicon Valley startups come from. Mm-hmm. It was inspired by a magazine called On Her Backs, which was a feminist focused kind of erotica magazine in the 70s.
Wow.
And it was inspired by these. And Cal, my co-founder, got obsessed with documenting queer history and through design and the medium of design and photography. And she found this magazine and she saw these personal ads on the back of the magazine. And she was just like, wow, this is so cool that people are expressing themselves so clearly, like who they are and what they're looking for. And like, what a world that is, as you say, from like swiping or scrolling or just this intentionality of connection. Was where the original inspiration came from.
Amazing.
Kind of evolved. But yeah, it's just a fun little fact about Lex that not many people know.
That's cool. Have you ever tried to find any of the original authors from that magazine and reach out? It's kind of cool to connect and maybe get a signed copy of the magazine. Let them know that they inspired you. Like I said, with classifieds, the reason why it's so important, regardless of what community you feel like you're a part of, when you are writing about what you're looking for, you're attracting people, you're bringing people to yourself. And I even used to tell people in San Francisco, when you're looking for an apartment, write an ad on Craigslist, because then people who have what you're looking for come to you, and it's mm-hmm. much easier. And it's no risk, getting onto Lex is no risk. Like even if you don't find somebody, you realize more about yourself and what you're interested in and what you're, and I think that's really incredible. And so, the more effort you put into writing something, the more value you get out. And so I think that's why you guys see such amazing traction. Let's talk a little bit about, before we get into the funding, where are you guys at now? How many users? What are the hot cities? Like, for people listening that want to jump in, tell us a little bit about the stats, where you're at now with growth.
So I can tell you where I'm at with Lex, and then also I'll jump into my personal story a bit because I also didn't
Please.
Ask. So where Lex is at right now. So yeah, so Lex is the LGBTQ, is the social app for the LGBTQ. We were founded in 2020, inspired by old school personal ads. And Lex's journey really started more in dating and romance. You know, 2020, COVID, everything changed. And actually the feed allows users to post who they're and what they're looking for. And it naturally evolved into community. We found that people were posting, I have a kombucha Scooby that doesn't fit, you know, or I have a sourdough bread starter, you know, I'll leave it on my doorstep, doesn't want to come pick it up.
Oh my God.
Just really cute neighborhood. Lexus feed is also location based, it's very neighborhood based. Mm-hmm. So people started interacting in these ways that were just really about community and friendships and connection beyond just romance. And that's really what took Lex off, because there isn't another space on the internet that is available for that for LGBTQ people. Mm-hmm. So really that really set our path on the journey. And my vision for Lex and how I see it growing is it becomes the social space for LGBTQ. If I meet an LGBTQ person in a bar or, you know, at a restaurant or, you know, in life, the first thing I would do would be like, let me add you on Lex. Lex becomes like the place that we connect. So really building this, like the digital home for LGBTQ people. And I mean, you talked about the needs of connection and like mental health needs, but there's a lot about safety and privacy and trust and consent. Yeah. 66% of LGBTQ people have experienced online harassment on another social app. 40% of people don't feel safe on social. So there's a real need to create a space that allows full expression of LGBT identities. And that's what we want at Lex.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I won't say the exact numbers, but it was higher than 66% on Tinder for, you know, is unfortunately not a safe space for people mm-hmm. to just write whatever they truly feel in their bio. And, you know, I call it Twitter fingers, but there's a lot of people that just get off and being mean and rude to others. And so I do think that that's really important. So where are we at with the user base now? Like, I mean, I know that you've got a London accent. Is London a hot city?
So yeah, Lex's user base. So when we initially launched, we did launch across the App Store and Google Play globally, but mm-hmm. more recently we've pulled back with a focus on the US.
Smart.
From a marketing point of view, and we're a location-based app. So obviously when you have network density in a city, you have a better experience. We see
100%.
So we've been the last year, we've been really, so 80% of our users are now in the US. We see, and we have our top five cities are New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Portland, and Seattle. They're our top five.
Interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have some, you know, there's some cities that have, like Philadelphia is really big for us. We have a few cities that are really big.
That makes sense.
We've been focused from a marketing point of view and a brand point of view, focusing on those top five cities to build a really active user base. And we see like much higher retention in those cities, and we much yeah. higher like DAU/MAU ratios. I won't get into the metrics, but
we can
if you want to go yeah. there. I've got them. But we see just much higher ratio, much higher like engagement and retention in those cities. So we've been really focused on that. And, you know, this is one thing that we can chat about today. But when I think about marketing for Lex in the future, it's about doing it. Thinking about it in that city lens, because we know mm-hmm. that when you build 7% of users to Lex come via offline word of mouth, which is kind mm-hmm. of amazing. The rest
is amazing.
Mm-hmm, the rest is like TikTok, Instagram, organic search. Everything's organic to date. So we know that city focus really works from a marketing and a product point of view. So yeah, what we're looking forward to now is like rolling that out and giving
yeah.
access to Lex and queer community to not just the big cities, but to, you know, if I'm in like rural Ohio and I'm 19, like, and I've realized that I identify with LGBTQ, how do I find those people? You know, that, so yeah. I think in those smaller rural areas is where a product like Lex is even more useful.
100%.
So yeah, excited about expanding to those.
Yeah, I'm from rural Ohio and have suicide in my friends and family, which is crazy. But it is a place where it's easy to feel like, oh, there's nobody like me. And I think mm-hmm. that's why you see growth, major growth in Chicago. No slandering anybody from Chicago, but it's not as open-minded as San Francisco or New York. And so where, you know, I've lived in West Hollywood and the Castro and like these amazing, super open-minded, friendly places where it's easy to find your community. Literally, there's gay sports bars and there, I mean, everything. It's not even just a gay club. It's just a club where mm-hmm. there's everybody. And cities that don't have that, that's where that word of mouth really spreads. Like, oh, you should go on Lex because we're safe here. And mm-hmm. so I think that's really awesome. And it's definitely smart. dialing it back, the international stuff. I mean, that there's always a halo effect doing getting international PR, and there'll always be growth in those cities. And then usually, you know, you can spend a little bit on the user base in those cities where you get the PR, but focusing on getting the dense user base in core cities is definitely the smart move. Let's talk a little bit about your funding round then. October. It's been a couple months. I know we were trying for a really long time to get you on the show, so thank you for joining again. But October last year was at least the hardest time in my recent memory to raise funding. And I know you're getting a lot of organic PR and a lot of people talking about you because that word of mouth just shows that NPS is so high. You're actually building something that's really helping people. That makes it easier to raise funding if you have those kind of metrics. One more thing I'll mention before I ask the actual question is, when you were so quick to shoot off the MAU and DAU numbers, that is also another sign of a founder that's going to have an easier time raising money when you're obsessed with those numbers. I mean, I've had people on the show, they're like, oh, I don't know it off the top of my head. I'm like, how did you raise money?
I'm a data nerd, and I'm lucky enough that I have an amazing person on my team who is also a nerd with me. And I'm obsessed, like, we have these beautiful Amplitude dashboards, and I'm obsessed with beautifying them and like creating them.
Amazing.
I just think I want to build a product that works and that gives people the outcomes of connection that I'm building it for. And the only way I'm going to know that is if I look at the data. And if I really, yes, I can do user, you know, obviously user research. And I also spend a lot of time on Lex DMing people and responding to people and getting, you know, nice user feedback. But the data is going to tell me, like, did this thing I put into the app have a real effect and make a, and like give a user better experience? Like, I need to see that in the metrics. So
yeah.
I think data has stories in it. And I think it's just about understanding how to storytell around it or how to like interpret the story. And when we get into like funding, I think that's a really, and like fundraising, I think that's the thing that became really, that I kind of discovered through practice, was realizing that you can have all the metrics that you want, but it's not like a video game where you like hit 500 and now you get to the next level. You know, two founders can have the same metrics, but it's how they tell the story of what those metrics mean or how you get there. And that can be like a difference between like a yes and a no.
Totally. And I love that you mentioned there's qualitative data on like actually speaking to users, which is the most important thing. Like you said, this, you don't know the actual story just from reading the data, the quantitative analytics. If you speak to users, there's always more to learn. Mm-hmm. And so you need both of those data sources. I love that. But how hard was it for you, you know, at that stage, already scaling, already getting a lot of organic PR, but the most difficult time in recent memory? And I know you have a huge background working with big companies, and maybe that made it easier also. But how hard was it to raise funding, and what are some things that made it easier?
It was still hard. I think, and actually just so we announced in September or October, we actually kind of closed around earlier on in the year. So we were actually raising in like the spring, Silicon Valley, the Silicon Valley bank collapse. Honestly, that was the turning point of the fundraise. We'd been up until that point, we were just getting nowhere. And then when Silicon Valley Bank collapsed, we had some, you know, soft commits with people that had their money in Silicon Valley Bank. And I just, it was at that moment where I was like, wow, if I don't like turn it up, this whole thing could collapse. Like this whole bank's collapsed. This is before we knew that the government was going to save it. This whole company could collapse. Like, you know, my like community could not have this thing if I don't find a way to fix it. So
wow.
That weekend, I went through Lex, I went through all the reviews, and I like read all of the DMs and like positive feedback. You know, we get negative, you know, we get people who want to change too, but I just deep dived into the product and like all the user experience stories and all the people that like had meaningful connections on Lex. And I was like, okay, I've got to channel energy that into whatever I do next. So then I went back, I rebuilt the deck, I rebuilt the data room, and then like just, you know, went back out to fundraising. And I think that like energy shift of like, this thing is going, I'm going to make this thing happen, and infusing like the core reason why I was doing it, which is like for the people that are
the
using
the story.
There you go, storytelling.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that was the real turning point from there.
Two things I hear from that. One is that when SVB collapsed and all of a sudden people started getting tighter with their money, it shined more light on Lex, because you do have that amazing NPS, that insane high number of referral traffic. Those are really signs that make this a much less risky investment. And that's really a key, I think, to raising money, is How do we make this company as least risky for investors as possible? And that kind of cut through all the noise of all the other companies that were really risky and super growth focused and spending a ton of money internationally and things like that. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is you realized, and you already knew, but I mean, when you went back and looked at those messages, this is much bigger than just me raising money. Like this is, like I said at the beginning, it's literally to save people's lives and to give people a community that don't have it. And investors can see that, oh, this company, this founder is going to do whatever it takes to help these people. Like they're going to be protecting my money in the sense because of that, you know? And for me, when I work with early stage companies, it's like, if you're just out trying to make money, you'll probably give up if it doesn't work out in like a year. But if you are mission driven as much as you are, like spending a weekend looking at messages, you're going to make it. You're going to figure it out. I don't want to cuss on the podcast. You're going to fucking figure it out. You know what I mean? Those are two things I think that are really important for people that are out there trying to raise money. Like one, it's not easy. If it was easy, then everyone would do it. And two, you got to be mission driven and you got to be really out there to help people. And if you're not, I don't think you're working on a big enough problem or a big enough project. And so, you know, I don't work with companies unless they're helping the world, even if it's in the smallest way. We're making data more visible for, you know, small businesses or whatever it is. But because we're not going to be able to succeed, we're not going to be able to do the hard things if we're just trying to make money. And so I love that. How many meetings did it take? Do you know off the top of your head? You're a data freak. I know you know numbers. rough estimate on how many meetings it took you. I should have told you before to have it ready, but
yeah, no,
I love to always hear this. Just give me a guesstimate.
Between like, I don't know, 50 and 100.
Okay.
But I'd say email outreach was probably like 300-400. And I think that's the other thing that I learned is, I think at the beginning I was like being super selective about who I chose and having a really small pipeline about who was going to fit. And that is still really great advice. But sometimes you just have to have a really big top of funnel. Even if those people are never going to invest, they help you practice your pitch. They help you ask questions so that by the time you get to the person who is more likely to invest, you're refined, or like you know to flag the things before they flag it themselves and say, this is a thing that we're working on. Getting that. And I think the other thing that having like large outreach at the beginning did for us is once we started to do that, we started getting inbound because, you know, the VC world is a small community, really. I mean, so that even if someone doesn't reply to your Instagram DM or your cold email, if they might have forwarded it onto someone else, or they might have like read the name Lex and then someone else is at dinner and they've mentioned you just don't know what conversations are going to happen as a result of sending those things. Even if you can't see it because they haven't responded to you, you just never know the impact that might have in the future. So that, I think once I started doing more of that, things started to pick up as well, you know, just like creating that momentum.
It's a numbers game at the end of the day, but I really love that line about, you know, practicing the pitch. I actually tell founders, even before you're ready to go raise money, start going to 2 networking events per week, no matter where you live. If you're in a small rural town in Ohio, we'll just keep using that example. Mm-hmm. You can just go to virtual events and practice your pitch. And I have a 50 plus founder in Seattle in the telecom space, and I'm forcing him to go to networking events to practice the pitch. And he's like, oh, wow, this is actually really helping, even though they're not telecom people. Mm-hmm. And you get that, the more confidence and the more feedback you get from speaking to those, not lower value, but like not actual investors, the more you can be ready and seasoned when you actually get in front of those people. And so, you know, that's the reason I asked that numbers question, is because people think that, you know, oh, I've done 15 pitches and I haven't raised any money. Like, get your ass back out there. You know what I mean? You're at 10% in. There's only that gap between success and failure there. It's just giving up. And so you just got to keep with it. And that's really amazing feedback. Let's talk a little bit about your marketing. So you guys raised $5.6 million a seed round, right? So that's huge for any industry, for any business at that time of the industry. But for a dating and community app, I totally understand. Even when I was at Tinder, they were like, we're social networking. I totally get that. And I use it like that. Mm-hmm. I am married. And when we travel, we still are on Tinder, like looking for platonic people to hang out and do. Mm-hmm. It's, and it does work. These apps work, whatever your goals are. But it's still not super easy to raise for that. So I'm sure that a large portion of that is being put towards growth. Let's walk through what's the marketing team look like? Because that's quite a lot of funding. You can actually build out a team at that point, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still an advocate of lean teams. I've run big teams. Currently in our marketing team, we have a growth marketing manager and a social media manager. And then my background is in marketing. So I lead
You're
the
marketing.
I'm in it. And we will hire for a head of marketing, eventually that will be on our list. But right now, yeah, it's essentially the three of us on the team.
Amazing. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, since I have some experience in this space, I think I know what your marketing channels probably are. Mm-hmm. Probably spending 40% of your spend on App Store ads. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you do App Store
well,
ads?
So funny. I mean, so even now we do spend now, but we're still slowly and carefully because I can, can better. But yeah, absolutely. Where we spend is App Store ads. We've recently just, honestly, only a month ago, started to do TikTok ads, some stuff on Google. But we're still pretty focused on marketing spend on our word of, we do we're hosting a big event in New York tonight.
Nice.
We do quite a lot of our marketing effort on in-person partnerships.
That's correct.
With, queer spaces.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Because that's where our audience is, and it's a market,
yeah.
That's where word of mouth happens. How we can scale, do the things that don't scale. I always told you at the beginning.
Yeah.
Whether we'll be able to do that globally, but we can do that across the US. So yeah, we think a lot about those micro moments that we can connect with people because that's where we're going to get the most valuable user. We're still doing to work out whether our TikTok users are as valuable as our other users. Well, how do they stick around from a retention point of view? So we do think about where the different users come from and the impact of that on their engagement of the product is also becomes really valuable.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if they're just a quick in and out, then they're not worth acquiring as much. I mean, you're still a high value user. We still love you no matter where you come from, if you're on Lex, but from a business point of view, you want to spend your time where you get the best ROI. That makes sense. Let's talk about influencer stuff. I didn't hear any, I definitely agree with the partnering with in-person spaces because you're an add-on to that. You don't have to come all the way out into the city to find your queer space. That's the idea. So it makes total sense to those users. From having many queer friends know that there are a couple influencers in my mind that literally brighten up their day and are almost a person in their family. It's a lot different than an influencer for lifestyle or for beauty and things like that. And so I could see some relationships with influencers working really well with Lex. Have you dabbled in that at all?
Honestly, it's a huge area that we should be in. I believe too, it's gonna be really effective. Candidly, we've done some in the past. And more recently, we haven't done it purely because of a team logistics, finding the influencers, sourcing them, agreeing the fees. So I've been thinking about what's the right way of doing that? Do we hire an agent? Do we bring in, do we get an influencer platform and source them ourselves? How we, influencer costs are skyrocketing. How do we benchmark those? Are we, so I think a lot of the need for influencers, we're all aligned on, I think how we build those plans and how we spend them and track them effectively is the topic that, which is kind of what is what's stopping us right now.
We're going to talk about it right now, Jen.
I got you.
The only person that's not going to like this conversation is your social media manager, because I believe that person should be handling a large portion of this. Basically, when I work with a founder that wants to keep a team lean, we give the opportunity to the social media manager to expand their skill set. You can bring in a consultant or somebody that knows how to upskill that person with a daily workshop. But the idea is that we build out a lean influencer program internally as part of the social media marketing initiative for the company. And then they report back on, this minimal spend, minimal time investment, these few relationships, this is the content that we got, this is what it's done. This is the perceived ROI. And then we can go to working with a bigger agency or hiring an influencer manager in the company, because to be honest, you could have a full-time role that, or even just, a young, fresh grad person that focuses just on influencer relationships. But here's what I think that first initiative should be. You mentioned that you partner with queer spaces and that you have a lot of success in that. I think you should do a one day or overnight pop-up event retreat for queer influencers. You could easily get some brands involved that are non-competitive, but it's a content party. So my wife and I made up this thing we call content party because she's an influencer and we hang out and make content for each other and whatever. And influencers really love that. And I've done that in LA with a dating app in the past. And you don't actually have to pay them anything. I mean, you can, but the goal is to make it so valuable that they're like, oh my God, I want to come on that anyway. You know, it's not to avoid paying them. We're not trying to take advantage of any creators. It's just, you know, we want to support the hungrier creators that really need the content, not the ones that have a manager and are making six figures already and whatever. Mm-hmm. Or you go bigger and you can support them and you if you can spend. But for me, I always want to start lean, like you said, see if these things really work. And the way to ensure that when working with influencers is to have very strict content guidelines. And I don't mean strict, like you must wear this and whatever. It's like, here's an example of content that's worked really well for us in the past. We like, you know, do something that's, you know, open-minded and fresh and that is inclusive. And, you know, you give them the guidelines so that they can't just, you know, here's me sipping a coffee talking about Lex in the caption. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do the things that you need it to do. And so I think there's probably an opportunity to get, you know, 5 or 8 or 10 people with significant followings together to test the app, you know, be like actually do what Lex does and come together for some cool thing. And then, you know, you get ad content out of that. They all promote it. There's something there. I think that could be really light lifting because it's event based and you're getting all the content done. You will actually be able to be there. Kel can be there and it'll be a cool way to work with influencers. And then the next thing I would recommend is considering whoever the, you know, like someone from Queer Eye or someone like really, really big in the space. You're further along, so it might not make sense at the valuation that you're at, but in the future of influencer marketing at the real top, they're not looking to do one-off $2,500 engagements with companies. If somebody's actually out there creating content, being a huge influencer in the queer space, they also want to save queer lives. They also want to create safe spaces and they want to be a founder and actually make transformative change. And so you can actually give that to an influencer at a huge scale, like someone with, you know, almost double digit millions of followers. It can be single digits, but the idea is that it's a, you know, multi-year engagement. They are going to speak about it at conferences, speak about it in interviews, and, you know, get you into doors that you might not even be able to get right now yourself with huge brands. And that can really open all the smaller influencer doors very easily as well. Like, oh my God, a chance to work with blank is a huge opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that work really well at previous companies in the past I was at. We started with MBA stars. That was really one of the first segments. I see that they start a VC firm and I put quotes around it. If you're watching this or only listening to this, you know, and then they put founder or investor in the company. And I think that's, you know, worth way more than the money. I see that millions of impressions on everything you do, but also it opens big PR doors, conferences that you want to speak at, different mm-hmm. things for thought leadership. It really helps a lot. So I think those two things are what I would recommend starting because of what you've said in the past. The last thing is micro influencers tend to be much higher percentage engagement. Mm-hmm. And for this space, you know, it's the people you want to support are the micro influencers. And I follow a micro influencer on LinkedIn, actually, that's constantly posting the atrocities that are happening to her in the workspace. And, you know, that comes to mind as someone that I would love for Lex to support. And I'll mm-hmm. shoot you her LinkedIn mm-hmm. afterwards. I mean, she's actually probably not even a micro influencer anymore. That person is someone who's really influencing a lot of people, even though her numbers are quite lower than, you know, the millions of followers. So that social media manager, the last thing, can build out a list of those people. Like literally everyone on the team can drop in the micro influencers that they would love the company to work with and to support mm-hmm. on a passive basis over the course of a couple of weeks. And then this person can then reach out to them. And it's a one line DM. It's, hey, we're going to start working with influencers in the queer community. What's your email address? And then as people are responding, which they're always going to respond, you know, here's my email. It's not talk to my manager. Here's my rate. It's just, yeah, sure. Email me, you know, like I'd love to hear what you guys want to do with us. We all have the same mission of helping the same people. That makes mm-hmm. it a lot easier for working with influencers than, you know, a a finfluencer, they call them. I work at some fintech companies, and those people are very money motivated. They know what their audience is all about, right? And so
it's tricky because I think there is definitely a purpose alignment. And, you know, when we talked about inviting people and therefore maybe you don't need to pay them because you're giving them content. I think the thing that I'm also really aware of is like queer community is underserved and also underpaid, like from a financial inequity, like queer, like a lot of data there. So, you know, there's a lot of nuance with like, if we're expecting someone to do something for us, but not paying them, like that's not respecting the value of the community. So I think there is I think there are ways that we can do things and be more economical with our budgets. But I also, you know, as a business leader in this community or like running a business,
you want to represent.
I want to show up and treat people with the respect and financial compensation that they deserve, while also balancing our budgets and things like that. But that's, you know, that's something that also I think about compared to, I think there's a higher expectation on us as well versus say if we were working in a different industry.
100%.
You know, we have to be aware of who we're working with.
Totally. But yes, any startup should take care, not advantage of creators and influencers. They will do amazing things for you. And in general, it's, you know, you don't get to where you're at now by taking advantage of people. And so I agree with that. I think my hat as a growth hacker, or my seat, as I'm always focused on testing things as lean as possible and then making long-term relationships with these influencers once it proves as a valuable channel. And that's when we get to start really rewarding them, like with events and, you know, bigger engagements where they can put, you know, co-founder and equity and all this you know, you could maybe just earmark like a percentage of equity for all of the creators you work with. And they all, I mean, that's actually a really cool, like Lex is stepping up to be the first startup to actually give equity to creators in the queer space, like to actually create ownership for them. So you could actually lean into that and make a whole campaign around that where creators apply to get access to this equity and, you know, become a part owner in Lex, which is, you know, something they can add on their profile and really promote that, you know, I actually own part of Lex and that I'm out there, you know, doing this. And then they're going to, you know, it just works in a bunch of ways. So, but I love that. And I agree with you. You should be, you know, that's just part of the same commitment is, you know, helping the community in so many different ways. Go ahead.
I love that with the micro influence equity, because again, like the, you know, the big equity for a big name, like we've thought about that and, you know, had a few discussions with people that have never gone anywhere. But I think the micro thing is interesting. And, you know, we have advisors on our team, for example, that have like a 2-year vest of their equity. And I almost think about it, you could set it up almost in that very similar way of this person becomes an influencer advisor for us, but part of their contribution is not that they advise on the business, but that they put, you know, put stuff out into the world on the business. That's really interesting. I like that as an approach.
Yeah, I think it'd be really cool PR, but also like it's about creating another queer space of these investors, advisors. That's like so cool and in line with cool. Well, one more thing I want to talk to you about marketing wise, and then I promise I'll let you go, is about giveaways. So I know, you know, there are a lot of brands that want to help the same communities. And even if their initial reasons are monetary, I sat with the Grindr team a couple of years ago at a GDI event, and they were talking about how brands just throw money at them for advertising. You know, it's a really hot target market for people. Mm-hmm. You know, the purchasing power in the LGBTQ community is really high. And I think there is some social good, hopefully there is some social good desires behind those brands. So I think it's very easy for you guys to get brand partners for giveaways. And a lot of companies overlook giveaways. And since you have a growth marketing manager on the team, this is more for them. Doing sweepstakes and giveaways as a user acquisition strategy is very, very overlooked for companies. But when you have easy access to products and brands, I mean, there's so many founders in the queer community now. I have one founder come into top of mind that has a beverage line in Austin, Texas, you know, like for the queer community. And like, there's so many unique, cool things like that, where they would just give you product. Doing scalable online giveaways. What I mean is, if any of us, you included, have ever like entered your email address and then it pop up like, get more entries in this giveaway by sharing on social media. Those are software platforms that build huge, huge social followings and email lists, like 10 to 20,000 entrants in a giveaway where you get all the prizes for free. You spend $1,000 on ads and you build huge email lists. I think that would work really well for Lex. Have you done anything like that ever?
No, we haven't. But we do often have, I mean, we get a lot of brands in our inbox saying like, hey, we want to partner with you about this thing. And they're often, you know, smaller brands that are really welcome to our community. And often we do things like we'll give away their things at our events, but we've never done a big online giveaway. We also have our own merch that people really love, that again, we give away in events, but we've never done online. So I do think there is a lot of opportunity there. I think it's how to like frame it in a brand way will always be like the question for me is like, and I think like making sure that we're choosing the right brands and it that are like you say that are aligned with what we're doing, so it feels
Totally.
exciting.
Task the growth marketing manager to just look at two tools, Dojo Mojo and Viral Sweep. These are the software platforms that do it all for you, and they have a lot of examples of startups in similar spaces that have, you have the email list. Do you know what your email list is as a company? Can you share that?
Yeah, we have. It's about honestly, we have a big email list, but we don't use it a lot because of transparently the way that we initially collected the permission data on that email list. So we don't use email marketing as a huge challenge for us because of that. Just the legacy of the way that they were connected. Now we actually only have signups via mobile phone. So actually currently we don't have a big usable mail list, which is a really big oversight. We have a big mail list. But it's not one that
You can
is usable.
promote to,
It's not one that is usable from a data perspective. It's like sign. We didn't just in the backlog of how the initial product was created. It was just a big oversight in like the data approvals and
Love
data
it.
consent is so important in our community.
Consent in general, and I love that you're so ethics driven. I think that's another thing that investors see. I apologize for interrupting you on that, but that's really respectable. I appreciate that.
But we do, it's a huge, actually, I briefed my team last week. I was like, we got to fix this email list problem because I know how powerful emails are, you know, in terms of like retention, or, you know, and like re-engagement of a user. So we have to start building that list again. And I think creating that list, you know, doing things like this is a really great way.
100%. I have an idea for you and the team for that. You could write a short, simple email like, hey, we don't have your permission for this list, but we want to send you amazing giveaways and deals and let you know about queer pop-ups that are happening. Can you just click this button if you want us to email you? If not, if you don't click it in the next week, we will never email you again. And then anyone who doesn't open it, you can automate another email to them if they haven't opened it, so it's not redundant to the same people. But then you're going to lose like 70 or 60% from that list. But the people that opt in are like hungry, ready, high open rate. And so it's just creating some value. And it's just a one line, like it should be from your email, like, hey, I'm Jen, I'm the founder. Like I started to help create this and that. Like, so it's not like I'm trying to sell this list and get revenue out of you. It's like I actually want to give you stuff and make sure that you're, taken care of and that you're safe. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's pretty organic. And so I
Yeah,
think a
I love
quick
that.
email blast will do that. Text only, don't put any HTML in that email and write it the way you would just write it, like one liner to a friend. That's going to get really delivered high. I think you'll see that most people will be like, oh my God, yeah, I want giveaways and to know about queer pop-ups in my area. And so you'll get a higher, hopefully, rate through there. But I think that the giveaways is a really big thing because again, it's, supporting the community with letting people know that these things exist, like these other products and stuff. Like you said, you definitely only want it to be complimentary things. It's not like a travel bag. It's like prep or like a really cool, valuable, thing for the community. Like there's a lot of people that are really trying to help this community. And so I think that you can do the giveaways with that email list and you don't have to do any prizes. But the coolest thing would be if Lex did the giveaway and it's a 1 month initiative. It's the growth marketing manager. It's like launching another feature or product, putting together the giveaway. It's get the products, structure the giveaway, promote it for a few weeks, get the winners information, promote the winners if they're open to it. And then you just utilize that list with that email automation, adding it to your newsletters and stuff. And it's all the same goal. It's like, how can we help as many people as fast as possible, right? And so I think that would accelerate that user acquisition quite a lot. And if you compare it to cost per email address or cost per subscriber from other paid stuff, it's significantly less. It's just a time investment. So I think
I
that's
love that.
something. Yeah, check it out. Cool. Well, I have kept you over time. So interesting, everything you had to say. I think it's so helpful for founders listening. I really appreciate your time, Jen. Is there anything else you want to tell people about Lex, how they can find Lex, what they should do with Lex, et cetera?
Yeah. So if you listening are LGBTQ identifying or know anyone who is, send them to either our website is lex.lgbt or go to the App Store and search Lex and we'll be the top result. Yeah, go and download us and share us with your friends.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Have a wonderful day and week and rest of your life. And I will hit you up when I'm in New York next to see if there's an event I can come support at.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That has been another episode of the Growth Experts Funded Now What podcast with your host, Andrew Lee Miller. If you liked this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you really liked it, please share with other startup founders and entrepreneurs and business owners in your network. Thank you so much, and we'll see you on the next episode.